For Sounds of Dissent, I'm Amy Grunder. Over the past few weeks, the press has reported harrowing details about the Obama administration's drone and cyber warfare campaigns, including President Obama's personal selection of suspected terrorists for inclusion in a CIA kill list. Outraged members of the U.S. Senate immediately called for hearings, not to investigate the exponential growth of an assassination program by an increasingly unaccountable executive branch, but to find and punish the leakers. We're pleased to be joined today by Thomas Drake, a former senior executive at the National Security Agency. A 10-year veteran of the Air Force, he served as a CIA analyst and contractor for the National Security Agency for 12 years before joining it full-time in 2001. In 2007, the U.S. government investigated Thomas Drake for giving unclassified information about the Bush administration's domestic spying program to a reporter. Mr. Drake thought the incoming Obama administration would drop the investigation. He was wrong. In April 2010, Mr. Drake was indicted under the Espionage Act for willfully retaining top-secret defense documents, a charge that was eventually dropped. The Obama administration has prosecuted six people under the 1917 statute, more than all previous administrations combined. Mr. Drake, thank you for joining us today, and welcome to Sounds of Dissent.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Amy.
It's a pleasure. There's a certain irony in congressional attacks on this administration this past week for breaches of state secrets, as you perhaps know better than anyone. This administration has prosecuted more government whistleblowers than any administration in history. Give us the Obama administration's track record on enforcing government secrecy.
Well, they certainly are evidencing what I can only call the height of hypocrisy, that they're more than willing to prosecute to the full extent of the law out of the Justice Department for whistleblowing. Whistleblowing is by definition in the public interest, and yet they're certainly leaking like a sieve from the very top of the administration on a routine basis now, as we've seen evidence of in the last couple of weeks.
Tell us a little bit about the people that have been prosecuted by the Obama administration under the Espionage Act. Who were they? You were the fourth. Who were the others?
Well, I was the fourth that was actually charged on the Espionage Act as a non-spy. If you remember, the Espionage Act was specifically created, it was always been a controversial statute to go after spies, not whistleblowers. So only the fourth person in history, Daniel Ellsberg, was actually the first person in history to be charged on the Espionage Act in the same manner that I was. And under this administration, there's already been six individuals prosecuted under the Espionage Act. That's more than all other administrations combined.
And can you tell us about John Kiriakou? He was the latest person who was charged just this past April. He was indicted also for as a whistleblower for giving an on-camera interview to ABC News. He's a former CIA agent who disclosed a CIA waterboarding.
That's correct. I consider John Kiriakou to be the new Tom Drake. I mean, two of the biggest scandals that came out of the Bush administration were, you know, the huge rendition and torture black site program, as well as the warrantless wiretapping program. And so isn't it ironic that the only, no one has been prosecuted for having created those programs or having implemented those programs, but the people that disclosed and exposed those programs have been prosecuted by this administration. He did not accept that torture was legal. He refused the training. He was actually offered the opportunity to go through the torture training regimen. He absolutely refused that, did not accept it. And I myself, when I was in the military, had actually gone through the SEER training up at Fairchild Air Force Base, which became the very basis for the torture and enhanced interrogation techniques and other euphemisms for torture that were used against detainees and other enemy combatants.
He also wrote a book, didn't he? The Reluctant Spy, My Secret Life in the CIA's War on Terror.
Yes. So clearly it's a two-faced policy, meaning for those who actually whistleblowing is in the public interest, have a reasonable belief that the government is actually, you're exposing different ways, a reasonable belief of government waste, fraud, abuse, mismanagement, illegalities, or danger to health or public safety. Leaking is a very, very different. Leaking is not in the public interest. It's fundamentally a political decision that is made.
Scott Shane, who basically broke the story of the drone warfare program, or the details, the most recent details that have come under so much criticism, and allegedly was fed this information by people in the Obama administration. He wrote on Wednesday in the New York Times that Mr. Obama campaigned for the presidency in 2008 by denouncing his predecessor's secret prisons and the torture of detainees, as you said, and which Shane points out were public knowledge only because of leaks of classified information to the news media. In other words, these leaks were without people like John Kiriakou and others, and like yourself, we wouldn't even know about these programs.
That's precisely the case. We wouldn't even know about the programs or the fact that they not only skirt the law, but they're highly questionable in terms of as an instrument of foreign policy. And yet, you know, the government, this is what I find, again, so paradoxical and a huge contradiction, that when you expose and disclose in an unclassified manner illegal or questionable activities and policies as part of the government, the highest level, but then the administration gives to itself permission to speak almost promiscuously when it serves in its own best political interest for political gain. To me, it's an absolute contradiction.
Well, this contradiction was pointed out by none other than Senator John McCain, who is, of course, accusing the Obama administration of selectively leaking information for political gain. But he himself noted what he called the unacceptable incongruity of prosecuting lower-level personnel such as Bradley Manning, Jeffrey Sterling, or John Kiriakou for allegedly leaking classified information while holding senior officials blameless for what appear to be comparable offenses.
Well, that's because, remember, those that are leaking, you know, they're leaking anonymously, they're leaking on the record. I mean, an incredible amount. Having been in the system, having worked at CIA, I worked at the NSA for a number of years, I was overseas in the pointy end of the spear. I find it unconscionable that this particular administration, particularly since this unprecedented war on whistleblowers, seems to be more than willing, deliberately willing, to release highly classified information just to make themselves look good. So I guess when the successes of these secret and even covert operations serve in its own best interest to show how good we are, that we're, you know, that I'm the man, that I'm, you know, that I'm the executioner in chief, that I'm the one that's taking personal responsibility for all this, how convenient is it to leak that type of information that really needs to remain in the shadows, and yet go after the very people that expose where the government is hiding illegal behavior and conduct in secret or under the veil of secrecy. It's just the absolute height of hypocrisy.
Well, this, and again, Joe Becker and Scott Shane, who reported this, the president's participation in this drone assassination program, they reported that they interviewed some three dozen of President Obama's current and former advisors who gave them these details. And of course, most reporters rely on government sources for information. That's not unusual. Think about Seymour Hersh, for example, who has often written his pieces, his disclosures on Abu Ghraib and other stories were based on anonymous sources. But you think of three dozen and it starts to look more like, well, the allegation is that that it was done deliberately, that it was orchestrated by this administration, or that the administration at least signed off on it.
Think of it as just another media campaign. The thing is, the information is a coin of the realm, and the nuggets of that information are the ones that are quote-unquote secret. So, again, I have to take great exception to using the media as a lapdog or granting access to certain reporters and then quote-unquote authorizing these leaks in a manner that manipulates, you know, the political spectrum. It's really a media campaign using highly classified information to make the administration look good. I mean, it's really the paradox of power here.
Well, it's interesting because the Obama administration is, of course, denying this. And yesterday, Attorney General Eric Holder assigned two U.S. attorneys to lead separate criminal investigations into these disclosures, and said that the unauthorized disclosure of classified information can compromise the security of this country and all Americans, and it will not be tolerated. Now, there were some allegations that some of these leaks, in fact, came from the Justice Department.
Well, that's very possible. I mean, I will tell you just from my own experience in the government over the past couple decades that the vast majority of so-called leaks, okay, or authorized leaks, which is an oxymoron, the vast majority of those come from the executive branch.
Let's talk about your case. You identified the September 11th, 2001 attack as a turning point in both your own life and in the direction of the National Security Agency where you were working. For listeners who are unfamiliar with your case, tell us briefly what you learned about the National Security Agency in the wake of 9/11 and why you went public with it.
Well, I didn't go public for many, many years. I became a whistleblower within the system. But in summary, Amy, what I found, my horror after 9/11, that very, very quickly, within the days and weeks following those, heinous attacks on American soil and the 3,000 people that were murdered, that the United States, at the highest levels of the government, decided to completely bypass the Constitution on many fronts. And as Dick Cheney himself has said, former Vice President Cheney, that we're going to go to the dark side. What I discovered at NSA is that General Hayden, who was the former director of NSA and the director of NSA at that time, entered into an arrangement with the White House in which NSA would become the executive agent for this quote-unquote surveillance program, a surveillance program that we still do not know, unlike a lot of the other secrets of government, we still do not know the full extent to which that has been implemented within this country.
That was a data mining program at the NSA called Thin Thread. Could you explain what that program was originally designed to do and then what happened to it after 9/11?
Well, Thin Thread was actually an alternative to a much larger program, but it also incorporated all of the legal protections under the Fourth Amendment for U.S. persons. In essence, it actually implemented the spy to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, in which you are required to have a warrant when you want to electronically surveil a U.S. person, which is a resident alien, U.S. citizen, or a U.S.-based corporation. Thin Thread had actually solved the major problem NSA was having in the 90s, was how do you deal with all the vast amount of digital data streaming across the Internet and make sense of it all. It solved the core challenge problem faced by NSA. Now, what they chose to do was...
What is data mining? Just again, because I don't think many of us had heard of this.
Yeah. Data mining is really what the super secret program, which is called Stellar Wind, was all about. They just simply gained access to massive amounts of private Fourth Amendment protected information and just brought it into the government system, either directly or through others. In fact, a lot of arrangements were made with a number of telecommunication concerns and secrets to gain access to that information. So the data mining is you're gaining access to all information, and then you're looking at where people are located, what they're doing, what they're up to, or what they're involved in.
So wait, we're talking about emails, are we talking about text messages? Are we talking about cell phones?
Cell phones.
Landlines.
All landlines, wired, wireless. Basically, the edict went out. We just need the data. Get it any way you can.
And what happens to it?
It's collected, it's stored, it's put into various databases. And then it's analyzed both through computers and by humans. The problem is that there's so much out there. But because of 9/11, it kind of went to the other extreme, and they made this. This is the key though, is they chose to bypass the Constitution, completely violate the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and just turn the United States of America into the equivalent of a foreign nation for the purpose of electronic blanket, dragnet, electronic data mining surveillance.
Because there was a way to encrypt the data to protect U.S. citizens, and that's, in fact, what the developer of the program, Bill Binney, one of them. I know you worked on the program as well. That was what was intended to encrypt this information when it came from U.S. citizens. And that was what... Is that the information you went to the Baltimore Sun reporter with in 2007?
There was a legal alternative. There was no need to go to the dark side. This could have been all done above board, and it would have completely protected U.S. persons under the Fourth Amendment and the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which is important to note to your listening audience, was the exclusive means, although there are other statutes and laws and acts, was the exclusive means by which you could legally violate a U.S. person's Fourth Amendment rights, okay, for national security reasons. You still have to have a warrant, although you could do hot pursuit, but then you would, for a short period of time, under certain conditions, but you still have to go back to the secret court for the warrant. They chose to bypass it. So it wasn't just that the wheels came off the Constitution. We were in an entirely different vehicle. And we opened up the Pandora's box, and that strategic decision to do so has had any number of intended and unintended consequences. The point now that even NSA is building this vast data center out in Bluffdale, Utah, which is supposed to come online based on public reporting sometime in 2013.
You're referring to, there's an article for listeners if they want to look for it. James Banford wrote in Wired magazine in March about this new National Security Agency data center, right?
Yes.
And the National Security Agency alone, even without this data center, it's already the largest spy agency in the world. There's a piece written about your case by Jane Meyer in the New Yorker magazine. She said, not only is it the largest spy agency in the world, she said it had the capacity to intercept and download every 6 hours electronic communications equivalent to the contents of the Library of Congress. And now there's another one.
Right, and that's only increasing. In fact, there's so much data now, they just don't have anywhere. Remember the old Amazon.com commercials where they were looking for a warehouse space to put their books?
Yes.
NSA, this is basically the secret cloud for them and others who will have access to it. So they want to store all this stuff they're collecting and then sort through it all later. You never know. Remember, you never know when you might need it. So having these vast dossiers of information, individual profiling on millions and millions and millions of people, the records of that being stored. Remember, part of the concern I have, frankly, is this is anathema to our form of government. Having this type of information without real accountability or oversight, which is supposed to be provided by other parts of government, like Congress. Part of this concern was born out of when I used to be an RC-135. I was a linguist. The country of I became an expert in was East Germany. They had a secret police called the Stasi. That's what their motto was, to know everything. And they're monstrously efficient at knowing everything they could about everybody and anybody in their country and beyond.
There's a suggestion that something bigger is driving the growth of government surveillance and secrecy that is possibly independent of whoever is president. Jack Balkin, a law professor at Yale, has suggested we are witnessing the bipartisan normalization and legitimization of a national surveillance state like nothing we've ever seen before. Your response?
It's one of the great fears that Frank Church had. Remember, a lot of this concern about a secret national security state or surveillance state came out during the 1970s after the government had severely abused its own powers and had done illegal surveillance and monitoring of war activists, journalists, reporters, and other dissidents that it simply didn't like or had decided to turn them into political enemies. There was a number of hearings that took place, including a series of hearings by Frank Church. He warned the country about what would happen if the technology became such you would have that part of the government, like NSA, having the ability to monitor just about any kind of electronic transmission and then some with the country. Essentially, what's happened is the government has wired the country for surveillance. That's already in place.
Thank you, Thomas Drake. I'm afraid we're going to have to end here.
Well, thanks for having me, Amy. I know it's on a very, very critical topic. I certainly am concerned and about the future of what we're seeing. And I'm going to continue to speak out about the need to return to our Constitution. I want to get my country back.
Where can people find more information about your case and the work that you're doing?
Well, the Government Accountability Project has been incredibly supportive and is an advocate and outreach for me during the pendency of my public trial. I was able to prevail and hold off the government after all was said and done, after I was faced with 10 felony counts. So that's just whistleblower.org. There's a lot of information out there about my case as well as other whistleblowers.
Thank you, Thomas Drake. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
I've been speaking with Thomas Drake, former senior executive at the National Security Agency and government whistleblower who was prosecuted by the Obama administration under the 1917 Espionage Act. For Sounds of Dissent, I'm Amy Grunder.